Hi, everyone. This is Nick Stevens. I'm the pastor here at Living Faith. I just wanted to take a moment and welcome you to Living Faith's podcast. If you've been following us now for quite some time or just joining us, I want you to know that including you in our community is very important to us. For those of you who have been with us for quite some time, I also want to take a moment and apologize for our inconsistency that we've had in serving you through this podcast. I want you to know that we've resolved some technical issues and we're starting to update our weekly talks so that you can once again be part of our community and enjoy all the things that God is teaching us. Also, to keep up to date more closely, I want to invite you to go to the App Store right now and download our app. Just search for Living Faith Lancaster. And once again, I really do want to thank you personally for being part of our community. Please take a moment and send us an email and let us know how we can pray and serve you. Blessings. Enjoy the podcast. So, people often ask me, Nick, why do you spend so much time in the Old Testament? Why do you spend so much time retelling the narratives of Samuel and Saul and David? How does this apply to the New Testament? And how about theology? How about the teachings of Paul and Peter? See, I teach out of the Old Testament because I think every narrative is the foundation for all the New Testament teaching. Put in this human context of flesh and blood. And this morning, as we do a rewind of the past 5 weeks, I want to show you that. How actually looking at the life of David actually gives us the principles, the realities of the teachings of Paul and all of our New Testament writers, where if you miss it, all we have to do is look at the gift of humanity. Because God is working out His sovereign love for us right there. Before I go there, I want to rewind. I want to read again 1 Samuel 22. Because this week I want to talk about mystique, the mystery of the church, the mystery of what God is doing, and this fascination. I remember one time Luke shared. We were going around the room and creating space for people to kind of share what God's been doing and just testimonies. And I believe it was Luke. He just talked about that he's just fascinated by the mysteries of God. And this is actually, this is quite a millennial word, by the way. Because when I was growing up, when I used the word mystery in the church, I got confronted by it. Am I right? You know, this idea of mystique and wonder and, you know, being attracted to what God is doing. People looked at me like I was an outsider, an outcast. But I love this word mystery, this word mystique. And don't shy away from it, because I want you to know, Paul used it over and over and over again, the mystery of the gospel. This is the mystery that I tell you about. He talked about the things that are seen are temporary, the things that are unseen are eternal. So I want to talk about this mystery. If you know Jesus, I want you to know that the mystery has been revealed to you. And this is what we get to live and we get to work out. But it's this mystery, this unseen, being made seen in our lives, but when it overflows, is exactly where the glory of God is revealed to those who know not the mystery. So I want to read in 1 Samuel 22, verse 1. Follow along with me. I'm going to read verse 5 and I'm going to skip to the end. Remember, David is on the run. And I believe this is where the kingdom of Israel is reestablished. Verse 1. David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brothers and all his father's house heard it, they went down there to him. And everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul, gathered to him. And he became commander over them, and there were with him about 400 men. And David went from there to Mizpah of Moab, and he said to the king of Moab, "Please let my father and my mother stay with you till I know what God will do for me." And he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Then the prophet Gad said to David, "Do not remain in the stronghold. Depart and go into the land of Judah." So David departed and went into the forest of Herod. Verse 6 begins with some of the behind-the-scenes struggles of what happened in the last chapter of 1 Samuel 21, when David was running and he was in this dilemma of choosing the sword that he used to defeat Goliath and choosing the bread. And he was in this dilemma where he ended up making some bad decisions and learned, which actually led him to being into this cave. And when he was getting the bread at the temple, there's a man named Doeg there who had very simple motives of, let's just call them self-motives. Motives of self-advancement. Because he heard and he saw David there. And so Doeg ends up back in conversation with Saul. And as you've been following along at all, you know Saul is furious. Saul has now made a full-out campaign to hunt David down and kill him because he knows that David is next in line for the throne. And so whatever Saul's intentions are, no matter what he knows God is doing, he's going to fight against it. And Doeg finds himself in this great place because if you read the passage, Saul's going to sit down and he's going to be asking his own people around him, what's David going to do for any of you? I'm your king. Come serve me. I can promote you. I can take care of you. I can give you a future of wealth and prosperity. And no one around the table is helping him. Not his own son. No one's stepping forward. But then there's this fiendish guy named Doeg who happened to bump into David at the temple, who has seen David, who knows who last saw David. So he steps out with the intentions to gain something for himself. He gives Saul all the information. And as you read the passage, David knew this was going to happen. How many of you have people in your life that you know you still want to share any information with because they're going to use it against you? Now, it always interests me when people smirk. Because it's a very human thing, isn't it? It moves us towards not trusting anyone at all. It becomes the most vile enemy of the weapon. For us, it closes us up from even trusting those who are trustworthy. Right? This is one of the things that has become a huge burden on the church. By the time we walk in here, we are so wounded by people who have hurt us that we don't even want to trust anyone that can be trusted. And David knew it. David knew that this guy named Doeg was listening in. He knew that this was going to turn out bad for him. And sure enough, it did. And Doeg goes to King Saul, tells him, who knows? And he talks about the priest who sent him on his way. And Saul says, bring the priest to me and I want him killed. And no one in Saul's household will kill the priest. Oh, except there's that individual who's be happy to throw you under the bus at work. Happy. So Doeg not only grabs the tools, the weapons necessary to kill the priest. No, he's well-intentioned for much, much more. I mean, he was just a shepherd of Saul's. He wants to move up, and so he actually goes and he kills the entire priest's family. And I believe the number's at about 80. Kills 80 people, women, children, to prove to Saul that he wants to be part of this kingdom, that he has what it takes. And it concludes with one individual, son of the priest, escapes. And he's now running for his life, and guess who he runs to? He's been backstabbed, his life has been ruined, he's lost everything. And who did he run to? He runs to King David. And David says, let me read, verse 20. But one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abathar told David that Saul had killed the priest of the Lord. And David said to Abathar, I knew on that day, when Doeg the Edomite was there, I knew he would tell Saul. I have occasioned the death of all the persons of your father's house. And he says, stay with me and do not be afraid, for he
who seeks my life seeks your life. With me, you shall be in safekeeping. And he takes him right in, and he accepts responsibility for what has happened, but he knows that he is not the one who did this evil. And this is such a great mark of what's happening, because it says all those who are in distress, all those who are poor, right? All those who are outcasts. Everyone in distress, everyone in debt, everyone who is bitter in soul, all come to David. Now, I want you to know that if this is the way that I'm to start a church, let alone a kingdom, these are not the people that you pick. Right? But God does. God does. That's exactly what's happening. God's establishing the new kingdom of Israel under David. And guess who is the king of being in distress? Guess who is the king of being broke? Guess who should be the king of being bitter? King David. And so God has prepared him for this moment because he's on the run. But remember, he's not running from something. He's running to something. He's running to something. He has a vision for the future. And so he doesn't lose hope. And in this moment, Gad shows up, a prophet. And I love this moment because David, he says to David, you can't stay here. You have to go. And the Hebrew translation here of where David went, and I love this, because it says there, you have to go to Judah. And it seems like such a trite detail, but I want you to know it's extremely important. And I'll tell you exactly where I believe that David's going. If you look at the Hebrew, what it says is, David, you have to go provide for your people. You have to go provide and take care of your nation. I know it's only 400 people, because translated in the Hebrew is, when Lord David went, he went to the forest where there was honey. This is the direct Hebrew translation. Gad says, David, you're now commander over these 400 people. Go provide for them. You can't just stay here and hide. You have to be responsible for the people that God's given you. Amen. And he goes to the forest where there's honey. Now, David doesn't know how long he's going to be in a cave. He doesn't know how long his life's going to remain this dark. But he knows that as long as he is, that he's going to make the best life that he has out of it. Now, here's an interesting paradox that I think is important to look at. We need to not look at this through a 21st century culture. Okay, I want you to imagine someone in your mind. I want you to imagine someone in your mind when I say, think of someone who you know is distressed. I want you to think of someone who is in extreme debt. Get a visual. I want you to think of someone that you know who is just extremely bitter. Think of that person. You might be thinking of yourself. And it's interesting because the people that come to mind, the 21st century mindset that I get when I say these are not the people that I want to gather, I want you to know is wrapped up in this tight little 21st century bow of entitlement. Let me explain. In my mind, those who are distressed sit around and just feel sorry for themselves. Those who are in debt haven't learned financial principles to actually build a new future. Those who are stressed or in debt, or those who are bitter, in my mind, and even in my own soul, my own life practice, I find myself spiraling down and down and down. But see, in this context, these people aren't coming to David to look to be saved. They're not coming to David with this idea of my life is spiraling completely out of control. Yes, they have the same pressures, but I want you to know that the idea of entitlement for them didn't exist. The idea of sitting around and waiting to be rescued didn't exist. They're actually going to David because they want to be part of something. They want to move their lives forward. Remember what Paul said? Crushed, perplexed, but never abandoned. Remember how Paul spoke about being broken, but never destroyed? See, these people, I want you to know, these are the people that God's going to use. They're not without hope. Okay? They're not without hope. David is not drawing to himself. God's not sending these people to David who are completely hopeless, who are completely useless, who are just waiting for David to serve them. No, he's sending these people to David who understand the burdens and the realities of life, who know that with the right relationships, who know with the right God, their lives have the forecasted trajectory of redemption. See, I think we lose that in our own lives, don't we? Oh my word. As Pastor Dean shared last week, just read the news. I find myself ready to give up on a daily basis, sometimes 3 or 4 times. See, these are not individuals that are giving up. These are individuals. And how do I know that? Because these 400 people, if you read the next chapter, these 400 people are going to grow to increase. And you know what's going to happen as they increase? These 400 men, they are going to actually be the victorious ones in the battles that David leads them into. See, and in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, when we go to battle, I'm not taking the distress. I'm not taking those who are in debt. I'm not taking those who are, you know, frustrated or unfocused. These individuals are living out the redemptive nature in their lives. And David knows it. It's why God's allowed David to walk through this path. It's why David is running this race. Not because he's running away from something, because he's running to it. In order to get to the prize, in order to finish what God has for him, he has to go through the adversity. He has to go through the trials. He has to be tested so they can be standing on the other end. He has to be tested so that as God adds to their number, David can say, "You will be safe with me." Have you ever said that to anyone? See, what actually connects us, this has always been one of those inhibiting factors that I think we struggle with when we go to church. And I want you to know, I'm so authentically blessed by all of you in this room, because when you come here, you come and you just move towards letting God's glory shine. And it's so amazing. You know, and it's interesting. See, I know that. I know that you come here to release all that God is doing, and I know that. But it's interesting because I think we so often think that the person next to us is not being completely honest, is hiding their distressed life inside, is hiding their concerns over their finances, is hiding the bitterness that rumbles around. But we don't come to church and we don't talk about those things. We worship. We actually try to lay those things aside, but you know what's so clear? The bitterness that rumbles. Our concern with our finances and our daily provision, the wounding in our life, the stress that we walk through, it's actually what binds us together. It's actually why we move towards Jesus. It's actually why and how Christ heals us. Have you ever noticed in your life that you get more connected to someone when they actually are sharing a struggle they have? I love connecting with the real stories in each and every one of you, because every time we talk about the places that we're stressed, the places that we need prayer, the things that our heart aches over, God's love moves through me and connects with you. And this is exactly what David is doing. And I want you to know that I really want this to be a place that you're safe. I want this to be a place where you belong. I want this to be a place that you can take those risks to share what's happening so that you can be prayed for and loved. And if you're in this room, I want you to know, please, at all extent that you can, please don't become the dough eggs. Please don't. Please fight for the person sitting next to you and not war against them. Because what this place needs to be is a place of faith and love and hope. And throughout the past 5 weeks, we've talked exactly about this. And so I want to turn to Hebrews chapter 12. And I want to give you the summary, the rewind, if you will, of everything that we've talked about. See, we began on the run by saying, choose your team. Choose your team. Surround yourself with people you trust. Surround yourself with people that trust you. And I like to credit Paul as being the author of Hebrews, but what we've seen and talked about these past 5 weeks is exactly what Paul says. Follow along with me. Chapter 12, verse 1. Therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses. We are surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. Listen, pick your team. Living Faith is my team. Alright? You're my team. I pick you. If you don't understand our finances, if you don't understand the journeys that we walk, if you don't know me well enough, all right, receive it at face value. Because those of you who know me know that you're my team. I pick you. And I want you to know, if you're a follower of Jesus, guess what? You're on the team. You're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses. Some of them are living and moving and breathing right now and sitting next to you. Others have gone ahead before us and have already finished. We are surrounded. Right? Pick your team. Verse 2. Sorry, let me continue there. One second part. Let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. See, chapter 2, when he talked about on the run, we talked about the road of adversity. That the path towards your future, the path towards the future that God has for us, my friends, I'm sorry to tell you, it's through adversity. And this is exactly what it's saying. Let us lay aside every weight, every sin, every adversity which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. Your race is different than mine, but I want you to know that the adversity is the same. We are all going to be facing the same adversities in our life. And I love exactly what Paul says here. Look at the life of Jesus. The adversity that he endured was the cross. And he despised the shame of it. Despise the shame of it. There is no shame of the adversity that you face. No temptation, no sin. It's common to all of us. It's what connects us. The road towards the future that God has for us is through adversity. Verse 3. Consider him who endured from sinners such hostility against himself, so that you may not grow weary or faint-hearted. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted the point of shedding your blood. And have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? See, when we spoke about week 3, we talked about run for your life, not from it. Run for your life, not from it. It says right here, consider him, this is Christ, consider him who endured from sinners hostility, so we may not grow weary. Jesus knew that his life work was running to the cross, not from it. He knew that the cross was where life was going to begin. It was a gift that was going to be offered to all of us. And he actually says, in your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted the point of shedding your blood. Running for our lives, not from it. Is it possible that when we face adversity in this life, rather than feeling downtrodden, rather than feeling that we've lost, rather than feeling all the stress, feeling like somehow God owes us the simple path, rather than the enemy trying to keep us out, is it possible that it's actually God moving us into this discipleship, teaching moment of strengthening our faith to move us towards the life He has for us? Not running away from our life, but running to it. Anyone who runs a race, anyone who's run a marathon, anyone who has exercised, know that there's pain to move through. And I love this video that we watched, this bumper that we watched in the very, very beginning. They're running and they're choosing. Remember the one guy? He's crazy. I love the way it hurts. Remember that? I love the way it hurts. Now I want you to know, when I'm exercising in the gym, when I was younger, there's always this, there's this saying that most of us are, has been common to us. No pain,
no gain.
No gain. Right? But for some reason in the gym, we push through that next set. There's a very tangible physiological response. And if you're a guy, right, you can actually feel your muscles growing. Right? And you must, because you go to the mirror afterwards to check it out. Right? Why is it in the gym that we see the purpose of pushing through the pain to reap the temporary reward, but in our physical lives, we challenge God for why he's letting things get hard? Run for your life, not from it. It's a shift in perspective, a shift in purpose to take hold of what God has for us. Following along. My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him, for the Lord disciplines the ones he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without this discipline in which all have participated, then you're illegitimate sons. You're illegitimate children and not sons. Besides this, we have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? For they disciplined us for a short time, as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. See, we talked about on the run, week 4, we talked about the road ahead. The road ahead. We have a choice to run. We're all running. We're all in the race, but we actually have to make the choice to run. We have to make the choice to finish. See, I want you to know, I can go out today and I can sign up to go do a marathon. That's the easy part. But to commit to finishing, that's going to take some hard work. Right? See, when we, many of us sign up to be Christian, many of us sign up to say, okay, I'm going to follow Jesus. But Jesus is actually saying, now that you've signed up, listen, I want you to go to the hard work that I have before you because I want you to finish. See, in the road ahead of us is a choice of commitment. And the word that Paul uses here is discipline. And the Greek here is extremely important because this word discipline has such a bad connotation to it. But I want you to know, they use the word discipline because the Greek actually is the word tutoring, learning, instructing, aligning, at times punishing, rebuking. It's all of it. See, if we are preparing for a marathon, I want you to know it's wise to take instruction to stop and get water. And if you're training for that marathon and running and you're not getting water, you refuse to grab water in this 26-mile run, I want you to know that your coach is going to come down pretty hard on you. If you're not disciplining yourself, resting well, and doing what is necessary to finish. See, what God cares about is finishing. He cares about us finishing. Why? Because of the glory and the hope and the joy that it takes across that line is, I promise you, is going to be the most elated moment of our lives. And when we're not taking water, I want you to know, as an athlete, when I didn't do what my coach asked me to do, I want you to know that they weren't shy at rebuking me. They weren't shy at using some choice words that sounded really, really harsh. And for my sensitive emotional well-being, it really felt quite offensive. But they knew how to get the best out of me because they wanted me to finish. See, this word discipline isn't just this idea of a harsh father saying, do this, they do this, do this. It's actually that of a great teacher. One who knows how to run the race, equipping us to finish. See, and I'll tell you this, we've talked about this formerly, but you know those who don't have to be disciplined? You know those who don't have to be disciplined, right? Those who are disciplined. Those who are walking through the right practices and behaviors to become, they don't need to be disciplined. And then we finished up, and I want to read verse 10. Sorry, verse 11. For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. And during that week, we talked about learning to run alone so we don't have to. Learning to run alone so we don't have to. See, running the race is both an individual thing and a corporate thing. We run together, but my friends, we all have to run alone. We all have to make the commitment to run alone. We all have to take on the discipline to run alone. I can't force you to be trustworthy. I can only work on being trustworthy. But it says here that as we learn to run alone, as we press on to being disciplined to finish, that the result is fruit of righteousness. See, the fruit of righteousness is finishing. The fruit of righteousness is trust. The fruit of righteousness is connection. The fruit of righteousness is forgiveness. The fruit of righteousness is peace. And in verse 12, this is exactly where the mystique is. Lift your drooping hands and strengthen your weak knees and make straight paths for your feet so that what is lame may not be put out of joint but rather be healed. Strive for peace with everyone and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. Strive for peace with everyone and for the holiness without which no one will see the Lord. See, this is the mystique. This is where the mystery is revealed. As we choose to run, as we press on to be faithful, to finish, that which is invisible, that which is a mystery, will become ever increasingly clear to those who do not know it. This is the mystique of the church. That we all are so bound to the work of the kingdom. Of faith and love and hope and gentleness and perseverance and discipline. That the forgiveness in our lives, the grace in our lives, the peace in our lives begins to not actually look like an act to those who are on the outside, but begins to look extremely genuine and attractive. Because of the overflow of the fruit of the Spirit of God.
Thanks again for joining us here at the Living Faith Podcast. We are so grateful that you're choosing to be part of this community with us. Send us an email, let us know how we can be praying and encouraging you. And we'll see you next week. Blessings. Thank you.